I will obey all the concepts of the Constitution at TM, he told the crowd, article, by article, by article TM. One of the crowd called up to the platform to ask, if you are of this disposition to obey the Constitution Article 113, by article, are you ready to obey the article that requires that a new capital be built in the middle of the country? ATM, the question took Kubitschek aback. He was silent for nearly half a minute. For years, Brazilian statesmen had been groping for a way to open up the vast interior of the country. Since it was founded, Brazil had been like a giant flywheel, without a hub in its vacant center. The weight of the population was clumped along the coast, like a heavy, unbalanced burden that left the rich interior resources inaccessible. Kubitschek felt that he could not now back down on the pledge of strict constitutional observance he had just made. But frankly, he had overlooked the article that called for the building of an interior capital. He looked directly at the man who had asked the question, and said, "You are right. I had not thought about this subject. But you are right, and I will build Brasilia." ATM later, of course, the city was to rise up from the wilderness to the astonishment of the rest of the world. And in spite of the heavy accusations of waste and corruption leveled at Kubitschek, even the critics now agree that it has opened up Brazil. Kubitschek had of course heard about Arago before, hardly anyone in Brazil had not heard about him. But that day in Congonhas do Campo when he observed Arago in action, he was dumbfounded. I don't TMT understand a TM, Kubitschek later said. I knew about his fantastic prestige from many of the prominent people who told me what Arago had done for them. But being a physician and surgeon myself, I found him so extraordinary that I cannot find words to express it. The people had faith in him. No one could fail to do so. He was a god at TM. Kubitschek was so impressed that he and his wife accepted Arago at TM's invitation to have lunch with him. Alit, with her hair in curlers as it constantly seemed to be, served a modest meal, and Kubitschek and Arago began a friendship that was to last for years. The friendship became critical to Kubitschek when one of his daughters had to be taken to the United States for a spinal operation because of a critical and massive deformation of the spine. The operation was so delicate that she had to remain completely immobilized for many months. 114, because of these TM, Kubitschek described the situation, she developed two enormous kidney stones after she returned to Rio de Janeiro. My wife was very, very nervous, because this complication could lead to a serious and perhaps lethal condition. My wife said to me, "Could we ask Arago to come down to Rio and see what he could do for our daughter?" I agreed. I reached Arago by phone. I told him our daughter was critically ill, but did not tell him what her problem was. Congonhas do Campo is a 6-hour drive, but he was here in Rio the next afternoon. He came in our home, and before I had a chance to tell him anything about my daughter or TM's condition, he handed me a prescription written on a plain piece of paper. As a doctor, I recognized that it was a specific for eliminating kidney stones. But how could Arago know her condition? Since I had not been practicing in recent times, I checked it with my own doctor. He indicated that he didn't TMT feel it would do much good, but felt there would be no harm in trying it. Arago TMS prescriptions were said to have an effect entirely beyond the bounds of the prescription itself. I gave her the medicine, and she became completely cured at TM. From that time on, President Kubitschek and his wife would often go out of their way to stop in Congonhas do Campo for an informal visit with Arago. They presented him with a solid gold wristwatch, but Arago bluntly refused it, explaining that he could not accept any gift or money. Conditions in Congonhas do Campo had now become so jammed from the sick and the dying who clustered in the streets that Walter de Freitas, Arago TMS brother, built a modest hotel next to the Spirit Center where Arago worked. It was not a work of art, but something had to be done to increase the accommodations in the village, which had been strained to the limit. The hotel of course drew more attention to Arago, who had now taken on his job as receptionist in the state welfare and pension office as a means of supporting his family. This, added to his work in the clinic, brought him to the brink of a 16-hour day, every day, with the exception of weekends, when he often worked at 115, selling real estate or in his beloved Rose Garden. Reporters continued to grind out miracle stories, which had proliferated to the point where they became commonplace. Roberta Freire, a journalist from Realidad, who was also a doctor, pressed Errigo hard on the reports that he must be making money from kickbacks on the prescriptions that he was writing, although no evidence could be found. Errigo insisted this was not true. He admitted that his fame as a healer might help in some of the real estate sales, but that was the extent of it. He said that he was determined to give his children a good education in contrast to his own meager one, and that he welcomed the occasional financial help he received from the wealthy members of his family. The reporter asked him, "Hey, does your brother own the hotel, Errigo? They say you are partners and that you will not take care of anyone who does not stay ATM." Errigo stood up angrily. "I used to treat my patients in my own home ATM," he said. "One of the complaints against me was that I was contaminating all the boarding houses and hotels of the city. My brother Walter alone built the hotel. I made no suggestions whatsoever. You saw during the consultations I ask only that the patients have faith, pray, and take the medication. Let my enemies prove that my brother and I are partners. Let them examine my bank account. God would not help me to cure if I were dishonest TM. As the reporter left, Arrigo's TMS anger had faded, and he asked, "You are a Catholic?" "ATM, yes TM," said the reporter. "A good TM," Errigo answered. "Our Christ is the same. The rest does not matter TM. At the office of the state police in Congonhas do Campo, Regional Inspector Helvisio Aranz was preparing for the interrogation of witnesses in the Errigo case. He was a little disturbed about the reports coming across his desk that the citizens of Congonhas do Campo were not particularly interested in talking to his interrogators. In spite of this, he had complete confidence that he would have a cut-and-dried case. Some of Arrigo's TMS enemies would be bound to 116, talk. All that was needed was a handful of them, and the case would be as good as sewn up. When Antonio Myers Ebro arrived in the police office on August 1, 1956, Inspector Aranz lost no time getting down to the questioning. After a few preliminary questions to determine that Sebre was a 42-year-old resident of the town and a citizen of good standing, he said, "Tell me what you know about Errigo TM. Sebre said, "I knew him when he had his restaurant and bar. Several years ago. Now he a TMS working for the pensioner CATM. What kind of person is he?" "ATM, well ATM," said Sebre. "He a TMS a very smart man. Always looking out for himself. Trying to get ahead in politics. He takes advantage of anything he can to do these a TM. What about his trying to heal people? What do you know about that?" "ATM, well, I suddenly noticed he began this practice of illegal medicine some time ago. People began coming to his house all the time. He TMD give them some kind of piece of paper with a prescription on it, then he TMD promise them the TMD get well TM. Did you notice anything else?" "ATM," the inspector asked. "Yes TM," Sebre said. "He started operating on people. People who were very, very sick. The ones that the doctors couldn't TMT help TM. Did they get well?" "ATM, I couldn't TMT say that. I don't yet TMT know TM. Did you actually see any of these operations?" "ATM, no TM," Sebro answered. "I never really saw any TM. Just heard about them." "ATM, yes. I just heard about them. There was all kinds of talk about them. All over the town TM. What did you hear about them?" "ATM," the inspector asked. "They all say they were just tricks. Tricks done with the guts of a chicken or a pig. That a TMS what they say a TM. Eh, but you have never seen this yourself? ATM, and no. But I heard that Altimiro charges everybody 15 cruzeiros for every card he gives out in line. That a TMS what everybody says a TM. 117. Eh, are you sure of that? ATM, eh, that a TMS what everybody says a TM, Cebro answered. And I also heard that they have to sign a card saying that they will vote for Arrigo or he won't a TMT treat them a TM. A what else do you know about Arrigo? ATM, a he a TMS got a big appetite, and drinks a bottle of wine with every meal a TM. A but you haven't a TMT seen any of this yourself? ATM, a no a TM, said Zebra. A but a lot of other people have a TM. Eh, I guess that a TMSL a TM, the inspector said. Eh, if you a TMLL just sign this statement, you can go a TM. Zebra signed the paper and left. Inspector Arounds knew that this wasn't a TMT much of a statement, but it indicated that he would be bound to get stronger direct evidence as time went on. But the next few witnesses were all strangely vague, even though they included some of Arrigo's TMS enemies. One of the ticket agents at the railroad station brought word that someone had come into the station and announced that Arrigo had charged him 100 cruzeiros for a treatment. It turned out that the man was actually insane, and had paid nothing. It wasn't a TMT until Dr. Carlos Cruz, the dentist from Belo Horizonte whose sister-in-law had been successfully operated on by Arrigo for cancer of the liver, testified strongly in Arrigo's TMS favor that the obvious strategy to follow was revealed to the inspector. Many who had been saved from a fatal medical prognosis by Arrigo were more than anxious to testify on Arrigo's TMS behalf. Paradoxically, it was in these defense testimonies that the real evidence against Arrigo could be shaped. Since Article 284 of the Penal Code provided that the simple act of prescribing, operating, or making hypnotic passes was illegal, all the success stories about Arrigo would do nothing more than lead to his conviction. Under the illusion that they would be helping Arrigo, his sympathetic witnesses came forward in droves to give their buoyant testimonies, until the files were bulging. Still, it was somewhat rankling to the prosecution that no one could prove that Arrigo had ever accepted money or that 118, anyone had been harmed. And further exasperating that practically everyone had to admit that Arrigo was a good father, a good family man, and of the highest character. Even the rumors of his alleged assignations failed to come forth. A series of mysterious incidents began happening at about this time that were never fully explained. On one occasion, late at night after a particularly long session with his patients at the Spirit Center, Arrigo was walking home alone down the dark, narrow streets of the town when from out of the shadows of a doorway a man jumped at him without warning. Eventually, the massive strength of Arrigo was successful in beating him off. Word immediately went around the town that the hoodlum had been hired by Arrigo's TMS political enemies. But the incident remained unsolved. Later, government marshals raided his house several times. They were unable to find anything incriminating. In spite of this, Arlette reported to her friends that Arrigo did nothing but continue to pray for those who were against him, insisting that they were misguided and should be forgiven. His supporters in the town felt no such magnanimity. They were up in arms, and Inspector Arantz could see that he might have his hands full if he moved too swiftly. Sitting down to make out his summary report on September 11, 1956, Arantz wrote, I tried to get witnesses who could give very complete information in the prosecution of the case, those that would back up our charges. We have many witnesses who discussed operations they have seen, including the use of cotton, and the removal of AE meter from the patient's ATM bodies. Some claimed that no scar was left. I think we have an ample number of these witnesses. I think it ATMS possible that we are confronted with a case of the use of hypnosis and psychotherapy. In many hypnotized persons, hallucinations are built up so that they have no concept of the reality of the situation. Many licensed doctors use these methods for some of their patients. It RTMS not at all surprising to scientists. Many people have been cured by the power of suggestion. But regardless of this, there is no question that Arago 119 has been practicing illegal medicine without a license. He is clearly, by the penal law, practicing a profession without having a license for it. It must be said, however, that Arago does not accept any remuneration for what he does at TM. There were, however, some delicate questions of law involved. While Article 284 made spiritual healing a crime, it was only because Arago stood head and shoulders above all the hundreds of other healers throughout Brazil that he was singled out. The others were not important enough for the courts to bother with. Another complication lay in the fact that Article 141 of the Penal Code guaranteed the free practice of religion to every citizen, and further assured him that he would not be refused the protection of the law because of his religion. Also, the illegal practice of medicine brought a much lighter sentence than the practice of charlatanism or witchcraft. This would have an important bearing on Arago TM's future. The actual law against witchcraft made a great deal of sense. Witchcraft TM, it specifies, is made punishable in order to protect both the individual and the public. If a person who does not hold a medical degree diagnoses a disease by its symptoms, if, without being licensed, he operates on patients, if he claims to be in a trance, in the control of a spirito, if he writes prescriptions or performs operations or administers herbs to the patient, if he uses passes, or certain postures or phrases or prayers to facilitate childbirth, bring relief to the symptoms of a cold, snake bites, cancer, high fever, bleeding, cataracts, deafness, and other conditions, such a person creates a vast danger to the health and safety of many citizens who depend on the state for protection of TM. If the law made good sense for the protection of the common citizen, the problem was that it failed to make any provision for a strange anomaly like Arago. Newsman Gabriel Cater, who lived in Congonhas, found that after several years of close observation, he had swung almost completely around, changing from a total skeptic to a firm believer. While he looked at spiritism with a jaundiced eye, the rationale for his new belief rested on 120, what he felt was the validity of parapsychology. Cater found himself returning again and again to the spirit center to watch Arago in action. He was finally forced to acknowledge from his many interviews with visiting medical men that Arago could do things that modern science could not do. Cater was convinced that instead of being prosecuted, Arago should be supported by funds for a special scientific study. In this way, Arago would be placed under the control of licensed doctors, a necessary step to prevent uncontrolled charlatanism from proliferating, but he would still be able to do the manifest good for society it had been all but proved he was doing. Reporter Cater at TMS articles on this track produced a growing groundswell among medical men throughout Brazil. But this was not enough to stem the tide headed by Inspector Arantes and his state police. They had bulldozed their way through the resistance, and were happy enough to get the case out of their hands and into the courts. By October 5, 1956, the case was in the lap of promoter Afonso Infante Neto, roughly equivalent to a district attorney. In his report to the court, he announced that Arago was condemned by the penal law, charged with the crimes of charlatanism, witchcraft, and the illegal practice of medicine. Arago was ordered to come to the court for a preliminary hearing. He would be faced with hand-picked witnesses who would testify most severely against him. Sitting in front of a table in the sparsely furnished courtroom of Congonhas do Campo, Arago, in a dark, short-sleeved sport shirt, made a sad and pathetic figure as he faced Judge Ilto Soares and the clerk of the court. The fight seemed to have gone out of him. He was unusually passive. It was an informal session, but the tiny room was jammed with spectators who leaned over the rail and watched anxiously as their local hero and international legend was questioned by the judge. Arago, his deep, moist eyes glistening in sadness, answered as if he were half in the room and half out of it. Do you confirm your previous testimony? ATM, the judge asked. 121, yes, ATM, Arrigo said. I confirm it, ATM. The judge showed him a list of the witnesses who were to testify against him. Do you know these witnesses? ATM, he asked. Yes, ATM, said Arrigo, as he looked over the list. All except one. But I want to say that the accusations against me are not true, ATM. In that case, ATM, said Judge Saws, who was an impatient man, with little regard for the subtleties of the case. I must ask you to give proof of why you say these, ATM. These charges are made against me, and have all been written on your official police papers, but I must say that I don't ATMT even know myself whether I practice illegal medicine or not. All I know is that whenever anybody comes to me for material or spiritual help, I must try to help them. I will not turn them away. I tell them to ask God for good health, ATM. And just how do you go about this? ATM. I start to say a prayer. It is the Lord ATM's prayer. And from that moment on, I don't ATMT see or know about anything else. I don't ATMT remember what I do. There is no memory of it at all. The others tell me I write out prescriptions for people, but I do not remember that. I don't ATMT know what kind of drugs they are, and I do not understand why this happens. I do not see them as I write them, ATM. What about the operations that are alleged? ATM, the judge asked. It is the same with them. I cannot give you any information about them. I am in a state that I do not understand. They tell me I have done these things. I would be happy if I knew how to explain these, ATM. Do you have witnesses in your defense? ATM. Yes, ATM, Arrigo said. I have a lawyer who is going to present them to you, ATM. He named several, a well-known industrialist from below Horizonte, a group of doctors, and a few prominent public officials. Have you any criminal record? ATM. I have been brought before the police only on CATM, Arrigo said. I took a knife away from one of the customers in my bar. He would have killed somebody if I had not done it. I was innocent, and I was immediately set free, ATM. 122, about the witnesses who will speak against you. Are there any friends or enemies of yours among them? ATM. There is one who is an enemy, ATM, Arrigo said. But I do not hold anger against him, ATM. Who is that? ATM. Arrigo named Joe Tilda Pound O'Hillariero de Cunha. He is against me politically. He is a doctor who is the brother of the man who ran against me for mayor. We do not talk with each other, ATM. Have you seen this before? ATM, the judge asked, showing him a copy of the only prescription of Arrigo that the state police had been able to round up. It was unsigned. Yes, ATM, Arrigo said. It is one of the prescriptions that I have been told that I write for people, ATM. You are a Catholic, Arena TM to you? ATM. Yes, ATM, said Arrigo. You are aware of the attitude of the church toward what you are doing? That you are doing the work of a curandero, a charlatan? ATM. But I am not a charlatan, ATM, Arrigo said quietly. I did what the priests wanted me to do. I went to doctors and psychiatrists. They said I was in perfect health. I just want to help the poor people, and I must do these, ATM. But you are doing what you are charged with, are you not? ATM. I am not the one who is doing these, ATM, Arrigo insisted. I am just an intermediary between a spirit and the people. It is the spirit of Dr. Fritz. He insists that I help people, and I am just doing what God wants me to do, ATM. You are a spiritist, then? ATM. I did not know anything about spiritism or about mediums. Some tell me I am a medium. I do not receive any payments or gifts for this work. I cannot do so, even if I wanted to, because it would not then be possible to help heal the sick. I would be very rich by now if I did this. I do not do this for any political reasons. I have tried to get away from this, and I thought I was going insane, ATM. You have been told by the police, have you not, that you must close up the spirit center where you work? ATM. AI can only do this if the spirit of Dr. Fritz tells me I must. 123. Do these ATM, Arrigo replied. You realize what you are asking us to believe, do you not? ATM. AI realize only what I must do, and how I must help people. ATM. The judge was reaching the end of his patience. A. If this is so, why don't you TMT you just make this Dr. Fritz of yours appear right here in this courtroom? ATM, he snapped. Arrigo did not answer. A transparent cloud seemed to slide across his eyes. He sat in utter silence as the judge glared at him. Several moments went by. Then the judge slapped his papers together and said, the case will continue on a schedule to be announced at TM. The case dragged along as Arrigo ATM's lawyer, Dr. Alfredo Figueiredo, of Belo Horizonte, began to gather favorable witnesses for his sui generis client. This part was not difficult, there were more impressive and prominent volunteers than he could handle. What he did face was the problem of shaping a defense for a client who was a criminal in the eyes of the law and a saint in the eyes of the people. Judge Soares was obviously a total pragmatist, who would see none of the nuances. Further, there was no real defense in the conventional sense of the law. Just how to size up this unprecedented case was a riddle. The passionate defense testimonies of medical experts as to Arrigo ATM's prowess with a knife would be of dubious value. They might even bury him, yet there was a remote chance that the testimony might help slightly, if only to soften the jail sentence. The lawyer realized the probable futility of gathering such witnesses as Dr. Carlos Cruz, Dr. Ari Lex, and all the other doctors who were convinced of Arrigo ATM's legitimacy. Their testimony could only suggest the setting up of a scientific study to get at the bottom of this phenomenon. But the law was rigid, and such a suggestion would mean nothing. The law might be rational in clamping down on charlatanism, but it was also irrational if it would send Arrigo to a miserable louse-ridden jail cell, where he would rot. 124. The penalties under Article 284 of the Penal Code were off. Arrigo was facing well over a year in jail and a heavy fine that would leave Arlette and his young boys practically destitute. The jail sentence would be utterly cruel on a man as sensitive as Arrigo, who, in spite of his crudities, was easily moved to tears. That the judge and the prosecuting attorney were emotionally on the side of the church and of Arrigo ATM's political adversaries seemed obvious. The only thing that appeared to be slowing them down was the fear of public outrage. As the fall, spring in Brazil, of 1956 slid by, the prosecution gathered more nails for Arrigo ATM's coffin as defense attorney Figueiredo pondered and worked on his strategy. He brought in an influential retired judge from Belo Horizonte who would be an excellent character witness. He was a fervent supporter of Arrigo, and would not only testify that Arrigo never accepted money, but that his work would have had to come from some higher power outside himself to accomplish the incredible results he had demonstrated. Figueiredo also got the support of Dr. João Ranulf de Mello, the doctor from Congonhas do Campo, who would testify about the unbelievable ovarian cyst and cataract operations he had watched and followed up on. He would state that the operations were something that simply could not be done by an ordinary human being, and that the court was dealing with events that were plainly supernatural. Dr. de Mello was joined in this by the group of doctors from Lafayette, who agreed that they would not hesitate to risk their professional standing by testifying in Arrigo ATM's defense. Their testimony would support that of the other doctors to the effect that a formal scientific study should be made, and that in any country other than Brazil, this would be done. They would also testify that when Arrigo was performing his operations he was not himself, but possessed by a guiding power outside himself. Further, the doctors would confirm that Arrigo had brought about many documented cures of terminally ill patients with cancer or leukemia whom medical science had given up. All would testify that no evidence of any harm, infection, hemorrhaging, or critical adverse drug reactions had been 125, demonstrated by any of the thousands of patients Arrigo had treated. This figure was now conservatively estimated at far over 500,000 in the past 5 years. If there were any contesting of this figure, it would be that it was too low.